WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Michael Puente, in for Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. We're 9 weeks into the testimony, and now the defense team is up to bat in the corruption trial of Michael Madigan. Last week, federal prosecutors rested their case against a former House Speaker who held an iron grip on political power in Illinois for decades. To get an update on the trial, we turn to Chicago Sun-Times federal courts reporter John Seidel. Prosecutors have put forward a sweeping 117-page indictment detailing multiple alleged schemes by Madigan. I had to start by asking John if he's seen anything like this before.
No, not like this. I mean, this trial is, like you said, 9 weeks of testimony. We had 2 weeks of jury selection on top of that. And it's just so broad and sweeping. You know, what it's really had me thinking about is we've had a lot of corruption trials over the last 2 years. Going back to January 2023, we had the previous ComEd trial, the trial of Ed Burke last year. This is the case. These were all part of a related FBI investigation that went on for a decade. And this is the trial that really is bringing them all together. We've seen references to of course, Eddie Acevedo and his sons, who were all prosecuted for tax evasion. Alex Acevedo, his son, was convicted in January 23. Obviously, the first part of this trial was kind of a rerun of the ComEd trial. There have been references to Ed Burke and, you know, the old post office that sits over the Eisenhower Expressway plays a role in one of the schemes in Madigan's trial, just like it did in Burke's trial. Anisette Collins, the former state senator, who's actually now in prison for cheating on her taxes. It's just all kind of come together in this just broad case against Madigan.
You know, John, you remind us briefly, because folks are out there are shopping, they're getting ready for Christmas and New Year's, so they're not focused like you are. What are some of the major charges facing Madigan right now?
Sure. So there's 23 counts in all, so lots of different counts, including bribery, wire fraud, and extortion. But the overarching charge here is this racketeering conspiracy. So Madigan is accused. Prosecutors say that Madigan led a criminal enterprise over nearly a decade that was designed to enhance his own political power and his financial well-being, and to reward his allies through a series of illegal acts. And they say that his longtime ally, Michael McLean, who's kind of known as Madigan's emissary down in Springfield, that he was acting as an agent of this larger criminal enterprise.
You know, being around the Chicago area, we've become accustomed to political corruption trials. But why does this corruption trial matter than the others?
I mean, I think that's because, first of all, like you said, I mean, the influence of Michael Madigan, he was the longest serving state house speaker in U.S. history. He was considered the most powerful politician in Illinois at the height of his power. He studied at the feet of Richard J. Daley, the late mayor of Chicago. And so for someone to rise to such significance in our state's political history to now be facing a jury and facing a judge is just really rather remarkable. And not only that, I mentioned this has been an FBI investigation that's gone on for more than 10 years now. The FBI in Chicago sank a ton of resources into this investigation in this case. So there's also a question of what's going to come of all of that work that was done by the FBI.
So, John, over the last few months, and as you know, prosecutors have brought some 50 witnesses to the stand. We've heard secret FBI records and, of course, ex-alderman and turned FBI mole Danny Solis. So what have been some of the more interesting or even salacious details from the trial?
Well, I guess let's start with Danny Solis, which I think had to be so jarring for jurors. You know, they heard lots of testimony about how things went on in Springfield and how a bill becomes a law. Some things got rather dry. And then Danny Solis took the stand. Danny Solis famously has some dirty laundry of his own. And I should mention that he started working undercover for the FBI and wearing a wire in 2016 after the FBI confronted him with evidence that they had gathered an investigation of him into things he was allegedly doing wrong. And he was a longtime member of the city council. He became the powerful chair of the zoning committee. And when Danny Solis, he wound up recording Madigan and others and took the stand in Madigan's trial, but he had to acknowledge some of that wrongdoing. He's famously been accused of trading, getting personal benefits from developers like Viagra, massages that he explained on the witness stand turned sexual. We heard stories about him going to China to explore business. This was, back, I think, when the city was exploring an Olympic bid. He wound up in China and met with a businessman who put a suitcase full of what Danny Solis described as $10,000 in Chinese money on a bed. Danny Solis said that he did not take it, but a woman he was having an affair with did take that money. it really turned into a soap opera there. But look, there have been other revelations too, which is remarkable given how much reporting there's been done on this investigation. We saw prosecutors connect business that was procured by Madigan's son, Andrew Madigan, who is not personally accused of wrongdoing, but prosecutors have tied the business that he got to a meeting between Madigan and Danny Solis, where Solis was asking for a favor and then Madigan was asking for a favor back. We also heard it was the day that Danny Solis took the stand, but it was from an FBI agent, actually. We heard that Danny Solis' sister, Patty Solis Doyle, also had her phone wiretapped. Now, that's significant because she was the campaign manager for Hillary Clinton's 2008 presidential campaign. This was after the campaign, and Patty Solis Doyle was never accused of wrongdoing, and the FBI agent said that wiretap was unfruitful. But that was another revelation. And I just want to say, we also heard a little bit about Madigan's lighter side. Madigan's kind of like famously private and secluded, but we heard that he's apparently a very passionate Notre Dame fan. He would yell and scream during those games. And he famously had a feud with Republican Governor Bruce Rauner. And we saw an FBI video where there was an actual punching bag in one of Madigan's offices with Bruce Rauner's face on it.
I'm seeing Netflix series all over this trial, We need something like that. So, John, now that prosecutors have made their case against Madigan, the defense gets their shot. So what was their first move?
Well, the Madigan's team actually started by calling a developer named Andrew Cretal, who was involved in an apartment project that found itself at the center of one of these schemes allegedly between Michael Madigan and Danny Solis. And, Madigan's accused of strong-arming these developers into hiring his private tax appeals law firm using Danny Solis and his powerful position as the zoning chair. But Andrew Cretal took the stand and said that he never really felt – at first he said he did not feel fear or intimidation. Basically, the point the defense was trying to make was that he did not feel extorted, although they weren't allowed to use that word on the stand. Then when he was being cross-examined by prosecutors, he actually kind of – it seemed to contradict himself and did acknowledge that there was some fear that if he didn't hire Madigan's firm, his project might get hung up at City Hall. So we heard from him. I also noticed that Madigan's defense attorneys, before jurors went home for a longer break, they heard from a former chief counsel to Madigan's, David Ellis, who's now an Illinois appellate judge. He was very poised and polished, a very good representation of people who Madigan would want to show jurors worked for him. And he just sang the praises of Madigan. He said that Madigan respected him and trusted the advice of lawyers, was down in Springfield trying to protect consumers, and absolutely would not have gone easy on a utility company like ComEd, which is, also accused of bribing Madigan.
Well, so there's also somebody who's a top defense witness, Stephen Selke. Who is he and why is he so significant?
Yeah, Stephen Selke's interesting. He was actually the first and only witness called by lawyers for Michael McClain, Madigan's co-defendant. So Stephen Selke, just a few months ago, was a star government witness in the trial of a former president of AT&T Illinois, who's also caught up in this larger investigation. Selke testified for the prosecution in that earlier trial, which ended with a hung jury. And his testimony then was seen as kind of problematic. He did not seem to go quite as far as prosecutors wanted him in terms of testifying that there was an exchange. You know, the details there involved a job for former state rep Eddie Acevedo while AT&T was trying to pass a bill. So he went from star government witness in September to the top of a defense witness list in this case because of how he testified. At least that's kind of like, as we're reading the room here, that's kind of the sense the defense attorneys have been clear that they think his testimony did not align with the government's case. And he testified this time much the same way he did in September. Again, kind of, he seemed to really kind of, you know, I think just quibble with some of the questions from prosecutors. He said, you know, yeah, we didn't want to rock the boat with Madigan. We didn't want a negative reaction from the speaker's office. But when he was asked if he thought Madigan would be willing to move AT&T's bill along if Eddie Acevedo got a contract, he said no. I mean, he had never actually thought that way.
So, John, we're heading into the holidays. Christmas is just a couple of days away. So will there be any trial activity during the next week or so?
Barely any. So jurors are not expected to return to the courtroom until January 2nd. They're going to have that one day of testimony the week of New Year's. Lawyers are also supposed to come back and see Judge Blakey on December 30th to talk about jury instructions, which is going to be a very boring, tedious process, but is also really crucial here, too. I mean, those jury instructions are going to tell jurors how they should consider all this evidence that they've been hearing over the last several months.
So what do you think, going back to the trial, will be the defense? What would be their biggest challenge when they go back?
For the defense?
You're right.
Well, I think that the biggest challenge overall is to counter this massive case brought by the government. The defense has done a good job. They have been challenging witnesses all along the way, poking holes in every part of the story that they could. I think they've been really aggressive with this AT&T portion of the case, which again resulted in a hung jury in that other trial. But look, the FBI threw tons of resources at this investigation for a decade. They built a very, very detailed case against the former speaker. So that's what they're up against, whether or not, you know, holiday break or not. That's going to be their challenge in the end.
So after the defense makes their case, what will happen next?
Well, we're expecting to hear at least one rebuttal witness from the government. So prosecutors are not completely done. They have at least one more witness to call. I think they told the judge before they left for the break that they're also waiting to see what else the defense does, and that'll determine whether or not they have any more witnesses to call. But, you know, then we're on to closing arguments. And I think right now the thinking is that could likely be the week of January 6th. They'll be closing. That should last for a couple of days, and the jury will be instructed and it'll be in their hands.
Well, that's John Seidel, federal courts reporter for the Chicago Sun-Times. And this has been a treat for me because me and John's history goes back to our days working for the Post Tribune in Gary, Indiana. So, John, thank you so much for joining us here today.
Great to do it. Great to see you.
This episode was produced by Meha Ahmed, edited by Dan Tucker, and mixed by Micah Yason. I'm Michael Puente, in for Sasha Ann Simons. Thanks for listening.
Love how WBEZ shows different sides of the story. I never feel like it's too polarized, and I think the reporters do an excellent job of trying to get the full story, trying to show different other sides. I'm often, when I'm listening to public radio, think in my mind, well, what about X? Or like, I have another question. Or like, have they thought about X? And most of the time, WBEZ thinks about all of it, which I really appreciate.